Ukraine's counteroffensive against Russian forces continues in the south.
What armed forces of Ukraine has confirmed as of now that Ukrainian forces managed to destroy another Panton crossing of the Russian forces.
Plus, the WHO says Ukraine's health systems have suffered extensive damage since Russia's invasion.
Over the past 6 months, it has verified 173 attacks on health facilities, which have resulted in nearly 100 deaths and 134 injuries.
And later in the program, despite their town being decimated from the horrors of war, residents of one village still take time to take care of themselves. Today is Tuesday, August 30th. From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening, I'm Steve Miller. Ukraine's presidential office reported heavy fighting on Tuesday in the Kherson region in southern Ukraine, an area occupied by Russian forces where Ukraine says it has launched a counteroffensive to try to retake territory. In a video address, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky urged Russian troops to stop fighting.
Але окупанти мають знати, ми будемо їх гнати до кордону.
But the occupiers must know, we will chase them to the border, to our border, whose line has not been changed. Occupiers are well aware of it. If they want to survive, it's time for the Russian military to run away. Go home. If you are afraid of going back home to Russia, well, then let such occupiers surrender, and we will guarantee them that all the norms of the Geneva Conventions will be fulfilled. If they do not hear me, they will have to deal with our defenders, who will not stop until they free everything that belongs to Ukraine. And this is not something special. It's not something that's just started. We've been talking about this for 187 days.
He added that Ukraine is taking back its own. Moscow acknowledged the offensive by Ukraine near the city of Kherson, but it also said that it had failed and that Ukrainians had suffered significant casualties. Joining us from Kyiv is Anna Chernikova with more. Anna, the reports out of Ukraine continue to indicate that Ukrainian forces are advancing in the south. What's the latest you're hearing from Ukrainian officials about this counteroffensive?
What we hear is that a lot of explosions are heard in the city of Kherson itself and in Kherson region in general. And both local media and local citizens report that these are hits, not air defense sounds. So and we actually see that there are quite a lot of hits by Ukrainian forces of the Russian positions. What armed forces of Ukraine has confirmed as of now that Ukrainian forces managed to destroy another Panton crossing of the Russian forces across the Dnipro River in one of the areas of the Kherson region. Representative of the Ukrainian forces said that about 30 units of Russian military equipment was destroyed with this hit, and more than 80 Russian soldiers were killed.
Thank you for that. I also want to turn our attention to Mykolaiv, which was the site of some shelling on Monday that resulted in a few people dying. This is Alexander Shulga, who lives there and was telling Reuters News that his house was hit and unfortunately his wife died. There were two fatalities. What can you tell us about what happened in Mykolaiv yesterday?
Yeah, unfortunately, yesterday was a very tragic day for Mykolaiv. During the day, powerful explosions were heard in the city and also in the surroundings. We know about very bad shelling of the city center. It was reported by the mayor of the city, and also particularly the shelling of the residential buildings. Casualties were also confirmed. For the moment, we know that at least two people were killed and 24 were injured. Again, the numbers could change because shelling continued today as well, and in general, Mykolaiv for the past weeks, even months, is under very intensifying shelling and is one of the really hot spots in the south. And also, we hear that Mykolaiv massive shelling is mostly done with anti-aircraft missiles S-300, which usually leads to numerous of destructions and damages. And again, as reported by the mayor of the city, mostly private sectors were targeted, and the city center itself.
The IAEA delegation has arrived in Kyiv. Have they spoken to reporters and given any kind of inclination as to what their travel plans are and when they may be able to visit the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant?
We don't have any comments, direct comments from them, a part of the comment from the head of the mission and energy's chief, Rafael Grossi, who confirmed that the mission is to come in the recent days. And today it was confirmed by the Ukrainian, by the press office of the Ukrainian Energy Ministry of Energy, that actually the mission has arrived. They are in Kyiv, according to this report. What we know is that reportedly the mission consists of 14 representatives, including Rafael Grossi himself. We know that no United States or Britain representatives are included in the mission. This was a demand from Russian side. We have information that the mission is represented by the experts from Poland, Lithuania, Serbia, China, France, Italy, Jordan, Albania, Mexico, and North Macedonia. No plans were reported. Any details have been reported due to the security reasons. But what was told by the agency's chief, that the mission should go very soon to the site. So we're going to wait for further information and further confirmations, because I think that we will get confirmation when the mission is has actually arrived. So we will go into wait and update you on that.
Reporting for us from Kyiv, Ukraine, Anna Chernikova. Anna, thank you.
Thank you, Steve.
Visit voanews.com/flashpoint for additional updates throughout the day. U.S. officials say Russia is running into problems with Iranian-made drones. Mike Gracia from the Associated Press has that update.
According to Biden administration officials, Russia has experienced technical problems with Iranian-made drones that were acquired for its war on Ukraine. The officials, who spoke on condition of anonymity, did not detail what was described as numerous failures. U.S. intelligence believes the delivery of unmanned aerial vehicles this month was likely part of a Russian plan to acquire hundreds of Iranian-made UAVs. Facing economic sanctions for its invasion of Ukraine, Russia is turning to Iran as a supplier of weapons. Last month, the Biden administration released satellite imagery indicating Russian officials visited Kashan airfield on June 8th and July 5th, where they examined the Iranian drones. Mike Gracia, Washington.
The first shipment of Ukrainian grain to Africa since Russia's invasion has arrived in Djibouti. The grain will be distributed in Ethiopia to help the drought-stricken nation cope with worsening hunger that threatens to become famine. Henry Wilkins takes it from here.
On Tuesday, the UN chartered ship Brave Commander docked at port in the East African country of Djibouti. The ship is the first to carry grain to Africa from Ukraine since Russia invaded the country in February. Mike Dunford, East Africa Regional Director for the UN's World Food Programme, WFP, spoke to reporters at the port.
The food on the Brave Commander will feed 1.5 million people for 1 month in Ethiopia. So this makes a very big impact for those people who currently have nothing, and now WFP will be able to provide them with their basic needs.
A Russian blockade of Ukraine's seaports forced Ukraine to halt nearly all deliveries of grain, which sparked worries of a worldwide food crisis. A settlement between Kiev and Moscow that was mediated by the UN and Turkey in July, known as the Black Sea Initiative, saw a resumption in exports of wheat, other foodstuffs, and fertilizers from three Black Sea ports at the beginning of August. The WFP said 150,000 tons of additional wheat grain from Ukraine will be sent in the coming weeks, thanks to funding provided by the United States. In landlocked Ethiopia, where the grain is now headed, more than 5 million people have been displaced because of conflict. A total of 17 million people are in need of humanitarian assistance as the Horn of Africa endures another year of drought. Dunford says the Black Sea Initiative is a step towards easing the situation.
We've already seen a reduction of 15% in wheat prices globally since the Black Sea Initiative commenced. What we want to see is more food flowing. We need, from WFP's perspective, millions of tons in this region. In Ethiopia alone, 3/4 of everything that we used to distribute originated from Ukraine and Russia.
There are concerns the resumption of exports from Ukraine may not be enough to make a dent in the crisis. Abdullahi Halake is with the Washington-based advocacy group Refugees International. He says the amount of grain arriving to Ethiopia is not enough.
When you consider over 20 million people are in need of humanitarian aid, and food inflation stands at 40%. So I think this is very important.
Humanitarian organizations say parts of Ethiopia's northern Tigray region may be in a state of famine because of the conflict there and a de facto humanitarian blockade imposed by Ethiopia's federal government. Although limited aid was entering the region, renewed fighting between the government and Tigrayan forces that began last week led to the UN announcing Monday that it has suspended aid convoys into the region. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
Citing unparalleled attacks on healthcare facilities, the World Health Organization said this week it is working to reconstruct Ukraine's health system. The system has suffered extensive damage since Russia invaded the country 6 months ago, and Lisa Schlein has those details.
The UN Health Agency has recorded what it calls an unprecedented number of attacks on healthcare facilities in Ukraine. Over the past 6 months, it has verified 173 attacks on health facilities, which have resulted in nearly 100 deaths and 134 injuries. WHO's Ukraine representative, Jan Ohabich, told reporters that deaths and injuries continue to rise and will continue to do so until Russia ends the war.
While these attacks are not only the violation of international law, they also they're a barrier for many who need care as we are going through the war. So it is not only the supplies and others we need to support, we need to ensure also that the services are available. But also the healthcare workers are under immediate risk as we go through these times.
The United Nations says the war has killed more than 5,500 civilians and injured nearly 8,000, including almost 1,000 children. UNICEF says about 5 children on average are killed or injured every day. The Children's Agency says this is due to the indiscriminate use of weapons, often in heavily populated areas. Speaking by video link from an air raid shelter in Dnipro in eastern Ukraine, Habich says many people are on the move and many are suffering and need care. He said WHO is accelerating efforts to reach out and provide humanitarian assistance to millions of people across the country. At the same time, he said WHO is working on rebuilding Ukraine's shattered health system in coordination with national and local authorities.
He sees that reconstruction of the health system has to be part of the recovery of the whole country across all the sectors. And that's why we are currently concentrating both on the humanitarian response as well looking to the recovery, as we have seen in the health sector and other sectors.
To date, the World Health Organization has delivered more than 1,300 metric tons of medical supplies in Ukraine, including medicines for diabetes, cardiovascular disorders, and other non-communicable diseases. Habich said support also is being provided for mental health, trauma, and emergencies. He also said COVID-19 vaccines have been delivered to Ukraine in recent weeks in light of the increasing mortality rate across the country. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Steve Miller. After Russia invaded Ukraine, 3 friends were forced to leave their native towns in the east for the western city of Lviv. But that didn't stop them from instantly restarting their lives. Amalian Ostrudliak is up next.
This small window next to a streetcar stop in downtown Lviv is where Ivan Danchenko's new life started some 3 months ago.
Today we have chicken pineapple pies, cheese spinach pies, onion pies, and galettes with blueberries.
a 19-year-old political science student from Borodyanka, he opened his cafe together with his friends, Serhiy Stoyan, who's from Irpin, and Darina Mazur from Nizhyn.
We tried not to ask for help, for any financial aid. This is why we started doing this, trying not to burden the state.
Cheesecake, fresh from the oven.
Darina learned everything here with us, but she learns very quickly.
Hello, hello, this is New Year's Kit. My name is Serhiy. Today, we're making corn.
Their cafe shop is named after a cat that played a part in culinary vlog that Stoyan started back home and continues today. After he left for Lviv, the cat ended up in a shelter and ran away during Russian bombing. Stoyan is still looking for it.
I'm looking for him. Yes, Mr. Cat's missing. He ran out during an explosion. And now I'm walking around here, feeding other cats.
In addition to regular customers, the friends take care of four-legged guests at their cafe shop. The water bowl outside is never empty.
At first, we did this to distract ourselves. My grandmothers and grandfathers lived through occupation. I thought about them constantly. I have the so-called survivor syndrome. Why am I here but not with them? Running this business was helpful in not thinking much about that.
Demchenko thought he was leaving his native Borodyanka for just a few days, so he took with him two t-shirts, a laptop, and $500 in cash. Back then, he didn't think that in just a few months, he would be a co-owner of a small Lviv business.
Lviv welcomed us, and we are endlessly grateful to this city, so we do what we know best.
Mr. Cat is the only thing missing from the friends' new life here. They still hope to find their beloved pet with the help of their many social network followers who have promised to help them look. Amaliano Shudlak for VOA News, Lviv, Ukraine.
The village of Borodyanka in the Kyiv region was one of the first cities in Ukraine to be shelled by the Russian military. Dozens of people were killed and hundreds more lost their homes. But that hasn't stopped them from taking time out to take care of themselves. Anna Kostuchenko brings us that story.
We just finished renovating our apartment. We bought a new bed. And now I'm thinking, what beds are you sleeping in now, my children? You worked so hard, and now you're lying here.
70-year-old Maria Vasilenko visits the grave of her daughter and son-in-law daily. On March 1st, Russians dropped a bomb on their apartment building. Vasilenko and her grandchildren escaped, while 41-year-old Olena and 45-year-old Serhiy were buried under the rubble.
It was some kind of high-explosive bomb that cut through this panel and went into the basement. If it hadn't exploded, my children would have been alive. And those who came to rescue them from the basement after the explosion were shot by Russians.
Vasilenko lost not only her family but her home. She lives now in a so-called modular town, where rooms are big enough only for a bed, a table and a chair. But it is better than sleeping in the open, says pensioner Alla Shmorgun.
On March 2nd, Russians dropped a bomb on our house. Some people died, others are still missing. Volunteers are helping, they give us food and support us. Still, it's hard.
Most people have what they need to live. But in a town consumed by grief, locals are now trying to meet other less material needs by holding a beauty day fest. As part of this initiative, 25 hairdressers and manicurists did their magic on the residents for free all day. The idea belongs to 30-year-old beauty salon owner Natalia Vashunenko.
I enjoy making people beautiful and helping people. And the event that is taking place in Borodyanka is a combination of these two passions of mine.
Vashunenko's apartment building was also damaged. She now lives at her mother's house in a nearby village with her children and husband. Every week she brings hygiene products, clothes and food collected by volunteers to residents of Borodyanka and nearby villages.
We understand that life will never be the same, but I told myself crying is not cool, and maybe there is someone else who suffered more than me.
Since February 24th, Vashonenko's husband Igor has been doing his part as well. He was evacuating locals from areas occupied by Russian forces. He has saved hundreds in Borodyanka and nearby villages. The Vashonenkos find strength in each other and volunteering. Beauty Day in Borodyanka is just one of their initiatives that help residents of liberated villages return to normal life. Anna Kostyuchenko for VOA News, Borodyanka, Ukraine.
Ukrainian refugees in Los Angeles, California were allowed to live in student dorms over the summer. But with the start of the school year, they're not certain where they're going to go next. VOA Russian visited a dorm at the University of Southern California and spoke with refugees who are facing new hardships. Anna Rice narrates this story to round us out.
This is my room. I live here with a roommate. Here's his bed, and here's mine. Can't complain, really.
A refugee from Ukraine, Serhiy Ushakov, has been living in this student dormitory of the University of Southern California for the past 2 months. The room next door is occupied by Tatiana Shevchuk and her daughter Masha, a professional gymnast. But soon, students will be back, and the refugees will have to find a new place to stay. And life is already hard.
It's only thanks to volunteers that we are still keeping our heads above water.
The toughest thing was to stop worrying about where you need to run tomorrow, what you're going to eat, and of course, managing stress.
Olga Ginsburg is a doctor and a volunteer. She has spent the last 5 months helping Ukrainian refugees at the Mexican border. Now she is doing what she can to help them find accommodation in California.
28 people live here. All in all, over 100,000 refugees came to the U.S. and they all have to live somewhere. In August, I'll be hosting refugees in my home.
Since the start of the war, Ася has been volunteering as well.
I'm from Moscow, from the Russian Jews. My grandfather is from Kharkiv, mixed blood. My country, my people have attacked other people and are trying to wipe a nation out. They can't stop.
Volunteers say they're working on getting the refugees authorized to work in the U.S. That way, they'll be able to provide for themselves and pay for accommodation. But it's not an easy process.
People who have entered the U.S. after April 11th, thanks to the Uniting for Ukraine program, they are now applying for work authorization, but the wait time is between 8 and 18 months.
Human rights activists are working hard to expedite this process for the refugees. On top of finding accommodation and helping with legal issues, volunteers also help refugees stay fed and have access to psychological support. At the moment, volunteers are raising funds to help refugees find accommodation in the fall. They have raised over $35,000 so far, but that's not enough to ensure that all those who escaped the war will have a roof over their heads this fall. For VOA Russian in Los Angeles, California, Anna Rice, VOA News.
And that's going to do it for us today. Be sure to stay up with the latest developments, not only in Ukraine, but on news and events around the world. You can do so 24 hours a day by pointing your web browser on your phone, your tablet, your desktop computer, or any other electronic device to voanews.com and follow us on social media at VOA News for even more. On behalf of the entire team at Flashpoint Ukraine, thank you for listening. Until next time, I'm VOA's Steve Miller. Be well, be safe. And good night.
This is the voice of America, Washington, D.C.